Thank you all for attending today's ceremony to honor the newest two Braves to graduate from the prospects list. Right-handed pitcher Huiscar Jose Ynoa. Signed as an amateur international free agent in 2014 by the Minnesota Twins out of Puerto Plata, Dominican Republic, traded to the Atlanta Braves in 2017. 17-34 minor league record with a 4.32 ERA in 5 seasons. 389 strikeouts in 372 2/3 innings. Mr. Ynoa graduates from the outfield fly rule prospect list as the 15th ranked Braves prospect. Right-handed pitcher Bryce Everett Wilson. Fourth round draft pick by the Atlanta Braves in the 2016 draft out of Orange High School in Hillsboro, North Carolina. 29-20 minor league record with a 2.94 ERA in 4 seasons. 429 strikeouts and 410 1/3 innings. Mr. Wilson was twice a Minor League Baseball America All-Star in 2017 and 2019, and a South Atlantic League All-Star in 2017. And he graduates from the outfield fly rule prospect list as the number 7th ranked Braves prospect. Please congratulate our newest graduates.
Welcome to the OFR Farm Report, your look at the Atlanta Braves minor league system, brought to you by OutfieldFlyRule.com, hosted by Andy Harris and Matt Kritzberg.
Hey everybody, welcome and congratulations to Huiscar Ynoa and Bryce Wilson for their graduation. Thanks to MLB on the very last day of the year deciding to change the rules and have service time that is accumulated in September to count toward rookie status. So, Ynoa and Wilson will not be rookies next year, so they are officially graduated. Also, congratulations to the Atlanta Braves for their third consecutive National League East Championship. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm awesome. We're getting ready for the playoffs. We actually know who our opponent is now in the Cincinnati Reds. And we're recording this on Monday evening, so we're about 36 hours away from our Wednesday morning game. So that ought to be a lot of fun.
One more congratulations to be had. Freddie Freeman, just a little while ago, actually was named National League Player of the Month for September. His numbers were super silly good. And hopefully for Braves fans, this will catapult him to the top of the MVP voting, which will be revealed after the playoffs.
And unlike past seasons where it's just player of the month this season is basically half the season. So,
yeah.
So I think that would go a long way towards getting him that award. It sounds like he's picking up a lot of steam nationally now. So I think it's just hopefully a given at this point, but never count voters out in that category.
And it's interesting that the Braves will be facing the Cincinnati Reds and their Game 1 starter, who was just named National League Pitcher of the Month, Trevor Bauer, and seems to be a favorite for the National League Cy Young Award. I know we don't usually talk hardcore baseball here. Usually we talk the young players, rookies, minor leagues, and things like that. But let's talk a little bit about the playoffs coming up. By the next time we record, the first round will be over. It's only three games. So this might be horribly dated very fast. But Matt, just what do you think is going to happen?
It's a pretty good chance it's going to go three games regardless, but it's going to come down to the Reds pitching versus the Braves bats. I'm not particularly worried about the Reds bats. They don't have a whole lot of offense as it is. And I mean, they rang up some of the lowest numbers in MLB and runs scored and a lot of other categories. And that's playing half of their games in that little bandbox of a ballpark and playing a lot of their games against NL Central and AL Central teams. So I think it's going to come down if we can get past Bauer and Luis Castillo and possibly Sonny Gray. If it comes to that, that's what this whole series is going to come down to.
Yeah, it's funny. Both of these teams, not particularly good against left-handed pitching this year. And the Braves will be facing Castillo and possibly Sonny Gray in games two and three, both left-handed pitchers. So that's going to be interesting. Suddenly, Pablo Sandoval might end up playing a much bigger role than anybody possibly could have imagined just a few days ago.
Yeah, he got his first appearance as a Brave on Sunday wearing the bright red uniform, which was not terribly flattering on him.
Hey, Goalie!
Oh, yeah! But, I mean, he composed himself at least competently over at third base, and after watching Eddie Echevarria attempt to play third base over the last few days, that was a welcome improvement. But I think it's pretty much just a given at this point that Sandoval's going to make the postseason roster.
Right. And there was a injury update today, and it looks like the guys that have been kind of scratched and, you know, not playing a lot the last week, they're probably all going to be fine. That, you know, Austin Riley and Ronald Acuna was, I think, scratched for the last game. And of course, the big scary thing was Max Fried coming out of his last start after only one inning with a parent tweaking his ankle. He apparently is going to be fine and will be fine for game one. So hopefully the Braves are near 100% healthy. We all know how the last couple playoffs have gone as the Braves, you know, were banged up going into the final week, and it seemed like it really cost them. I guess Chris Martin also seems like he's going to be okay. I guess that's day to day. And of course, Chris Martin was hurt in the first game while warming up last postseason, and really kind of shook the bullpen up. So hopefully everybody will be all right and we'll be full steam ahead, and Pablo Sandoval will simply be a dangerous bat off the bench.
Yeah, I think Chris Martin may be the most concerning of those injuries right now, just because there's a pretty good chance he might not, even if he may be out. I would say there's a pretty decent chance he might miss the first round of the playoffs just to make sure his groin's okay. But I don't think it's as concerning as it was last season when the bullpen was nowhere near as deep and they had everybody all lined out with Green, Martin, and Melanson for last year's bullpen for the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings. And then all of a sudden, Martin's out, Luke Jackson's in, and things kind of go awry at that point. But this year, there's a lot more depth out there. You got A.J. Minter. I think Jacob Webb's going to pick up a lot more responsibility here in the near future. And there's other arms down there who are doing just as well, Darren O'Day. So I don't think it's as bad, but I sure would like to have him in there.
Well, let's talk about some of those other arms that might play into this. Let's talk about the rookie pitchers that threw this week. There was a ton of them. Let's go back all the way back to Monday. It seems like a lifetime ago, but Wescar Yanoa made his last start of the season. It was only three innings, and he got into some early inning trouble, but it seemed like he steadied himself as he went along. But he ended up leaving after three innings with a cracked nail. He was optioned out on Saturday in favor of Tucker Davidson, who we'll also talk about in a little bit. But I suspect Yanoa will probably make the postseason bullpen, don't you think?
Yeah, well, I think that's a definite, especially in the first round where you don't have to have as many starting pitchers. You can have more relievers. And that combined with the performance of Luke Jackson this season, I don't know if it's going to come down to those two, but I think, you know, I think he's done more than enough to earn himself a spot on the roster. And if he doesn't, it's strictly due to a numbers game, not so much based on performance.
And on Tuesday, we got Bryce Wilson making his first start of the season. Now, Wilson actually made two starts this past week on Tuesday and then on the final game of the season on Sunday. Tuesday was, of course, the clinch day. So anybody who had Bryce Wilson pitching on the day the Braves clinched the division, you're lying. Nobody had that. So let's talk about Bryce Wilson. Five innings, did not give up a run, only walked one, struck out seven. As a Bryce Wilson fan, I have to say it far exceeded my expectations and I was giddy. So maybe I'm going to turn it over to you for first impressions since you may be a little more unbiased than I am.
I think it was a big for him because originally this was supposed to be Cole Hamels. And then just earlier, like a few hours beforehand, because they even had the Zoom press conference earlier in the day where Cole Hamels said he was looking forward to getting to the playoffs. And then all of a sudden he goes out to take some throws and everything goes bonkers at that point. And Bryce Wilson's thrown in there. And I'm kind of wondering if he just didn't have time to dwell on the start and just went out and executed and did everything he needed to do. I mean, he had two different fastballs going. His slider was working for him. I mean, he had everything going. Like the big thing was that only one walk over five innings and he mixed it up very well. I mean, granted it was against the competition that really, I mean, it was a pretty big game there with the Marlins. I mean, it was a clinch. It was kind of a situation. I mean, you knew the clinch was coming at some point, but it was a fairly decently high pressure situation. So I think it was definitely enough to give him another start later on the week, which we'll go over later on. But he's definitely worked himself into the playoffs. Definitely not on the first round roster, but I think going into the second round, he's got a definite shot of getting there.
Yeah, I was super impressed with his two-seam fastball. Just had a lot more life than we've seen in a while, at least in the major leagues. The four-seamer didn't have a lot of command with it, but paired with the two-seam, really gave two dynamic looks to the Marlins hitters there. Secondaries were kind of hit or miss. He had some pretty decent sliders. The changeup, he had no command over at all until pretty much the last batter he faced. He faced Corey Dickerson as the last batter in that fifth inning. He threw him two pretty good changeups, including one to strike him out. I was hoping he would come back for a sixth inning to see if he had kind of found the handle of that changeup, but they elected to go ahead and pull him, which was probably the right thing to do. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what they do. If they do... go to a second round and they do need a fourth starter, it is possible Bryce Wilson could be that guy. I wouldn't expect him to try to turn the lineup over more than two times, but way to go, Bryce Wilson, getting yourself in there in the last possible moment to possibly pitch some important innings in the postseason.
Yeah, and we'll go over his Sunday start here in a little bit, but that probably gives us a preview of the usage he's going to be facing come playoff time.
And then Wednesday was the Max Fried start, the abbreviated Max Fried start. He only went one inning, then tweaked his ankle trying to come off the mound. And then it was basically a bullpen game from there. But he's going to be okay. I'm sure he's fine, and there's absolutely nothing to worry about, right?
Of course. The Braves never underplay injuries come playoff time. I sit here cringing when I say that.
All right. Thursday, Ian Anderson started in a downpour. Let's face it, in any other circumstances, they would have postponed that game. But with it being a critical game for the Marlins postseason and seeding and everything, they did. They basically moved heaven and hell to get that game completed. And they did complete it. And I thought Ian Anderson, considering the conditions, was really good. He ended up 5 2/3, giving up 7 hits, but didn't walk anybody, even though the command was kind of hit or miss, especially with the fastball. Did strike out 6. No earned runs. He gave up 3 runs thanks to some interesting defense. You mentioned Adene Hechavarria at third base. He did not have a great week filling in for Austin Riley. Quite frankly, he played third base a lot like a shortstop, trying to, you know, staying back on balls that he probably should have charged on. You could tell it. He just was not really comfortable over at the hot corner. But Ian Anderson, he looked really good, all things considering, and I feel really good in a game 2 matchup against the Reds with him.
Yeah, same here. I think especially coming off that last start in New York where he walked 3 in the first inning of that game, he walked none in terrible conditions where they're probably having trouble getting a good grip on the baseball. 4 infield errors kind of did him in as far as that's concerned, but I mean, he gave up no earned runs over 5 2/3 innings. He scattered those 7 hits, and if it hadn't been for the defense, the pitching line would have been much better, and he might have gotten himself a victory out of it. But all in all, yeah, I see no reason whatsoever. He shouldn't be the number 2 starter in this playoff rotation.
And then Friday, we got Kyle Wright's last start of the season, and pretty much like he's been since he's come back up from the alternate training site. Really good start. 6 2/3 innings. He only allowed 2 hits. He did walk 3 and struck out 4, but overall, I thought it was a pretty nice tune-up there against Boston.
Yeah, I thought his use was interesting, especially when it got to the 7th inning. I mean, if they've removed him before then, his line would have been much better. I believe he was like in the 60-some-odd pitch category going into the 7th inning, but he got himself into trouble. He had three straight walks, and they gave him a chance to get out of the situation and got a ground out before they removed him for Darren O'Day. And I think part of that's to see how he would react. I think if it had been a more high-pressure game or early in the season, he would have been removed before that, before it got to the point of the 3 walks. It might have been like true Snitker fashion. Might have been he walked Jackie Bradley Jr. With 1 out in the inning, and I think that might have been it for him at that point. But I think they wanted to see how he would handle the pressure and what he could do to get out of it. And I think overall it was a good thing for him. Since there wasn't any pressure going on him there. But, I mean, overall, 6 2/3 innings, 2 hits, 2 runs, 4 strikeouts, and 3 walks, all of which were in the 7th inning. So, and even with all that, he still only threw 79 pitches, just under 7 innings at work. So I think he's very much solidified himself as the third pitcher for the postseason rotation. So if this first series goes 3 games, he's going to be starting that 3rd game.
Yeah, and I don't know. I think that could be – it could be strong. I doubt the Reds have seen Kyle Wright. They obviously haven't seen a ball this year. Probably none of them have faced him, except maybe some of the younger ones in the minor leagues. And that could be an advantage for the Braves. I know the pitching matchup, you know, if it turns out to be Sonny Gray or Kyle Wright, that's going to be a, you know, something that pundits are going to weigh heavily in the Reds' favor, and for good reason. But I don't know. It just Kyle Wright, he's really shown some stuff to pretty much everybody, especially the last 3 starts. And I liked what I saw. You know, like I said, like you pointed out, for those first 6 innings, he was lights out. I mean, absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, and looking at how the bullpen will be used in the first 2 games of the series, if they don't have to use the bullpen a whole lot, I wonder if they may just go to say, hey, let's get 1-2 times through the lineup and just turn the game over to the bullpen and let them clean it up from there. But if Max Fried can only go 5 innings, Ian Anderson can't go very deep in the game, they may call on Kyle Wright to go pretty deep into the 3rd game. So I think there's going to be a little bit of bullpen usage just to kind of keep an eye on things in those first couple of games, and kind of that'll give you an idea. But after that point anyway, it's going to be all hands on deck to try to get him through that series if it comes to that.
If it gets to a 3rd game, I don't think it really matters who had been used previously. I think you're going to see really some crazy. You might even see Max Fried, if he has a short outing in game 1, he could come back and pitch it out of the bullpen in game 3 if it's a close game. You know, that's the kind of craziness that you sometimes see in playoffs. So we'll see about that. Hopefully the starters give us good efforts and pitch into well into the inning, and we win handedly, and the bullpen will be nice and rested for round two, but we got to get there first. So like yep. you said, it's all hands on deck. And then Saturday, we finally get the major league debut of Tucker Davidson, who moved on up.
Well, we're moving on up. Moving on up.
Now, unfortunately, the line score for Tucker Davidson was not pretty. 1 2/3, 3 hits. He gave up 7 runs, although only 2 were earned. However, 4 walks and 2 strikeouts. He pitched a pretty clean first. I think he only gave up a walk, but struck out the first 2 batters he faced, and then got a pretty easy fly out to end the inning. And then the wheels really fell off that second inning. Matt, what were your impressions of Tucker Davidson's first start?
Yeah, that first inning, I mean, the first inning was really good. And I mean, there's a lot of people bragging on the Twitter timeline saying, hey, this is the guy we've been looking for. And people are even trying to talk about him possibly being a postseason rotation, which I don't think was ever an option. He had a spectacular game, but the wheels kind of came off there. I mean, he would have been in trouble anyway because he gave up a walk to Jackie Bradley Jr. and then Bobby Dalbec hit a home run. And what happened next is what really caused things to go awry when Denny Echevarria, there's his name popping up again, made an error and caused a base runner to get on. And it just kind of went loose from there. And then Dansby Swanson bobbled a double play ball, got 1 out, but it should have been 2. Granted, Tucker Davidson was walking the yard anyway, but he got absolutely no help from the defense on that. But as we pointed out at the end of last week, this was just to get his feet wet. This wasn't a tryout or an audition for a postseason spot. It's like, hey, let's let him get a major league start before spring training next season, because there's a pretty good chance he's going to be the 5th starter in this rotation coming out of spring training.
Yep, there's definitely a shot at that. And I will say, you know, between the two of us, we've seen Tucker Davidson a lot, and really the only pitch he had going for him, I think, consistently was the two seamer. It showed, especially in the first inning, but even in the second inning, it showed good life. He was able to move it inside, outside. He had some explosiveness and some movement on it, but he had nothing going on with the secondaries. And you and I both know his curveball is a lot better than what he demonstrated in that start. And you got to think it was probably adrenaline or nerves or something like that.
Yeah, even if he'd gotten the help from the fielders during that second inning, I don't see he with his pitch count going the way it was, he wasn't going to get more than about 3 or 4 innings deep into it. I mean, he got pulled after 53 pitches in inning 2/3. I mean, by the even if things had gone well, by the 3rd or 4th inning, he would have been 75, 80 pitches anyway, if not more. So I think it just accelerated his exit. But, I mean, just chalk it up to a learning experience. I mean, it's no harm, no foul. There's no pressure on him. So hopefully the Facebook crowd that constantly gets on these guys after 1 or 2 bad starts, like we've seen from Bryce Wilson or Kyle Wright, doesn't just get the torches and pitchforks ready to say that he's a flop. But that's certainly not the case at all. It's just like, hey, he got his feet wet, got a little experience. We'll see you in spring training of 2021.
Absolutely. And then Sunday, the last game of the season, we had Bryce Wilson going again. This time he just went 3 innings and he gave up a run, a couple walks and a couple strikeouts. Command just not as sharp for him on Sunday. He fell behind a lot of hitters again. The two seamer was still strong, but he had even less command of the four seamer. But I will say this, I think it was good that they removed him when he did, because it did feel like the wagon wheels were just about ready to come off of his start there.
Yeah. Oh, I agree on that. I believe it was the first inning he threw something like 30 pitches. It may have been the first inning, but the stat line looked decent with 3 innings and just the 1 run, but 5 hits, 2 walks, and 66 pitches in 3 innings. Yeah, I think it was just narrowly avoiding disaster, because I think if not the 4th inning, then definitely by the 5th inning, he would have been done.
Yeah. And he was trying to use the same mix that he did on Tuesday to good effect, but the four seam, he was just missing up so much. He was also throwing the four seamer a lot more than the two seamer. And again, I go back, I'm a Tyler Flowers fan in general, but one thing I really dislike about Tyler Flowers is how he catches Bryce Wilson, calling on the four seamer so much. And he's got other pitches, and even if they miss early on, you need to, you know, try to keep working him just to give hitters something else to think about. And Flowers just calls that four seamer all over. And I think that with him missing up so much, I think that's, you know, that was the heart of it. I think if he had gone maybe two seamer and slider a little bit more, he might have been able to certainly not walk as many guys or run up the pitch count. But I'm not blaming it totally on Tyler Flowers, of course, but it does seem like he has a little tougher time when Flowers is behind the plate.
Yeah, and that's what happened in the first start of the week. That's what worked so well for him, because even though he didn't have four great pitches going, it was enough variety to make the hitters actually have to think about some different things, and they wouldn't know what was coming down the pipe. But yeah, this one, he didn't have much working. And, you know, like I said, Tyler Flowers, I mean, he's got a really narrow focus when Bryce Wilson's pitching. And when the hitters have at least a 50-50 chance of knowing what's coming, they can either start teeing off or holding off and seeing if there's a walk coming their way.
All right. Now, the playoff roster for the first round, I'm assuming that the Braves will wait to the last possible minute before declaring what the roster is. But I think it has to be done, I think, by 4 p.m. tomorrow. When I say tomorrow, I mean Tuesday. Most of you all will be listening to this on Tuesday. We talked a little about Yanoa. We think we'll probably make the roster. Bryce Wilson, I'm thinking, won't make it at least for the first round. He'll probably be added to the second round. Would you agree with that?
I agree with that. There's just no reason to have him on the first round roster. It's going to be Fried, Anderson, Wright, and a whole ton of relievers.
Right. And among the young relievers, you mentioned Jacob Webb and Mentor and probably Yanoa out there. And then going with the experienced relievers we have. And, you know, Josh Tomlin probably out there for long relief if necessary. Let's talk position players just a little bit here. There's some interesting opportunities here with only needing three starters. There's a possibility they could add some position players that maybe didn't get a lot of playing time here. And quite frankly, I'm thinking Christian Pache, even if he doesn't start as a late inning defensive replacement and possible pinch runner, would seem to make a lot of sense.
It definitely does. I mean, we've seen other teams in the past bring in players for the postseason just a pinch run. Now, I don't know if it would be above and beyond Ender, like leaving Ender off the roster, or in supplement to Ender in case one of the other outfielders gets hurt and Ender has to play. But I would think at the very minimum, I would say, hey, just need a pinch runner. Let's say Tyler Flowers is on second base late in the game, and hey, let's throw him out there, because there's not a lot of speed on the bench for this team. And as we've seen, Ender, Inciarte is not a fast ball player anymore. He had a slower sprint speed than Nick Markakis this season, and it was about on par with Travis d'Arnaud. So that's not the guy you want in that situation. And also, as far as late inning defense, depending on who's playing in the outfield, let's say if Nick Markakis is out there late in the game, I mean, I'd much rather see Christian Pache out there for eighth, ninth inning defense if it came to that. But I think it's going to be very interesting to see who's out there, because you don't need as many pitchers since you're only playing a three-game series. You only need three starters. I mean, so you're not going to need 15 relievers. So I think you can see some bats you weren't expecting to. I mean, Yoan Camargo might be back, but I don't know about that. I mean, with Pablo Sandoval and Danny Echevarria, do you really need Camargo? And if you don't need Camargo, that might clear the way for Pache.
And then there's also the possibility they go with a third catcher as well, especially if they are considering using d'Arnaud. I assume d'Arnaud will start all three games. But if you carry a third catcher, that opens up the opportunity of using Flowers as a pinch hitter, or doing some fun pinch hitting late game things if you have a third catcher. So What do you think of the possibility of adding either Alex Jackson or William Contreras to this roster?
I think if it'd be either one of them, it'd be Alex Jackson. Just because they didn't really show any inclination, nor was there really need for any for William Contreras to come back after the COVID scare early on in the season. So, yeah, Alex Jackson could be that emergency catcher because they know he could play defense if you don't really need him as a hitter. But you kind of see the catcher usage a lot different this season than you've seen over the last few seasons. I don't know if it was so much a product of the short season or if it's just a performance-based. But Travis d'Arnaud has gotten a lot more of the playing time. It may seem like there was more of a split, but it really wasn't. I think Travis d'Arnaud got basically a two-thirds, one-third split, I think, with him and Tyler Flowers. And Tyler Flowers, I mean, it's gotten to the point where his framing's carrying him at this point. He only had an 86 WRC plus and a 0.2 F war. And if not for the framing, he probably would have been a negative F war player this season. Didn't even slug 400. So yeah, I think the Tyler Flower days in Atlanta are being numbered, but got hopefully one last good postseason in them.
And one last question before we move on here. This is just something I was thinking about when we were talking about Pache. Who do you think starts in the outfield in game one, Markakis or Inciarte?
I think it's going to be Markakis. He's had an absolutely dreadful September, but I think they're going to try to give him one last hurrah to clean things up and go out on a good note. But I think even at the end of the day, neither one of them is really a great option. But they're going to try to give Markakis a chance to prove the whole roll out of bed and hit 280 thing. But I mean, what are you really going to get out of Inciarte? Because offensively and defensively, he's just been very blah this season.
Yeah, I really wish they had given Christian Pache a little bit more of an opportunity here. It would have been very interesting to see if he would been able to gotten in Brian Snitker's good graces enough to maybe possibly get a piece of that outfield pie.
Yeah, and I'm kind of surprised they didn't really go the route they did with Tucker Davidson. I mean, Tucker Davidson, they gave him a chance to get his feet wet here with the start at the end of the season. Once the Braves had clinched everything with a couple of games to go, I mean, why not bring Pache up for start a couple of games, get him 10 or so plate appearances at least. I mean, he had the little bit of time earlier on in the season, but that didn't really amount to anything. I mean, it would have been nice just to give him a little cup of coffee before next season starts, depending on what happens with Inciarte and Markakis in the offseason.
Yeah. All right. Well, there were some items that are coming up. Obviously, on September 30th, the end of the minor league and major league partnership officially occurs. The PBA becomes defunct, and negotiations have not progressed enough that they have a new PBA yet. However, on Tuesday, MLB, by all reports, is set to announce that the Appalachian League will officially be converting to a wood bat summer league, specifically for college freshmen and sophomores. There was some reporting on this on Baseball America today, including some stuff I did not know. I did not realize that every team in the Appalachian League is actually already owned by Major League Baseball, and that there's actually already a carve out in the existing PBA that says that MLB can choose to end the league basically at any point as long as they just give notification to minor league baseball. So presumably that notification is being given and or officially it'll be given tomorrow. And that means essentially the first part of the plan of cutting the number of affiliated clubs takes place, and it's going to happen as a fait accompli. The 10 teams in the Appalachian League will not be affiliated ball clubs next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad in that respect, but it's good that there is going to be still some path going forward for them, because they could have easily have just cut them loose and say, bye, see ya. But getting this Wood Bat League, it'll be college freshmen and sophomores. course, they played with the aluminum bats in college, so this would be their first chance to kind of give them a showcase to get them ready for the baseball draft. But it's good that there's something going on there and they don't get stuck with this dream league or just have no baseball in their communities whatsoever. It's not the best case scenario, nor is it a great scenario, but I mean, at least there's something going forward that these small communities that love their baseball can get behind.
Yeah. And we know that some of these wood bat summer leagues, they do pretty well. I mean, in the Cape Cod League, there's tremendous points of civic pride among those really small Cape Cod towns. So I think ideally something like that happens, that the team will kind of embrace this, or the communities will start embracing this. And as a preview of really raw talent for the Major League Baseball side, this is actually, kind of a win-win situation. I don't think they were making money off the Appalachian League anyway, but now they get really good looks at college freshmen and sophomores in a wooden bat environment with facilities that are already hooked up with Rupsado and Trackman and all that stuff. So, you can definitely see the appeal here from a couple of different standpoints. We are still waiting, however, to officially hear of Major League Baseball's counter proposal, including the list of proposed cuts, which we understand is updated since the first list leaked way back in the spring.
Yeah, and a couple other interesting moves that happened this week, too, is that the Major League Baseball announced a partnership with several different independent leagues, the American Association, the Frontier League, and the Atlantic League. They're calling them partner leagues, official partner leagues of Major League Baseball, where there'll be a little bit of exchange here. MLB will provide some marketing and promotional activities for these independent leagues, and the independent leagues will get some analytics and some scouting activities going on there to give Major League Baseball new source of ball players. I mean, there's, I guess it's almost kind of a more official version of the Dream League that we've heard about, but this one's actually going to be endorsed by Major League Baseball. So it's good for these independent leagues that tend to struggle at times, but I think this is a good thing. It could be a good thing from both sides.
Well, it's certainly a good thing for the independent leagues. Most of those started in the 90s, and there existed essentially a cold war for a long time between those new independent leagues and then affiliated minor leagues, and even Major League Baseball basically just did not acknowledge those independent leagues. And now they are, as you say, official Major League partners, whatever that means. So it's good for them. Obviously, it's also a not so subtle hammer that can be used against the minor league baseball, which are still under negotiations. If things go really badly with those and they can't come to an agreement, then the independent leagues could potentially fill in there as kind of emergency minor leagues the major league teams could actually loan out their prospects to go play independent league ball. It's interesting. Major League Baseball, as we said, kind of holds all the cards right now as far as the negotiations go. There was a lengthy and I thought a pretty interesting interview with the Atlantic with outgoing minor league CEO Pat O'Connor. Most interesting, I thought, was his comments about the lobbying for the Save America's Pastime Act, which passed along with the big tax reform bill about 3 years ago. And obviously the minor league baseball feels like they were somewhat betrayed by Major League Baseball. They went to bat, so to speak, for them in lobbying efforts to get that passed in order to get minor league players be tagged as basically apprentices rather than full-time employees, thereby circumventing a lot of the federal and local minimum wage sort of laws and things like that. I don't want to dive too much into the politics of the whole thing, but that part really kind of left a sour taste in my mouth because that was because Major League Baseball pays the salary of these players. Minor League Baseball doesn't. And now the stripping of the minor league teams and losing those minor league jobs after doing that, I think is kind of one of the grossest things that Manfred and in his commissioner's office kind of has done.
Well, it kind of brings to mind with Pat O'Connor and the MILB doing the dirty work for Major League Baseball, the fable about the carrying the scorpion across the river. Pat O'Connor carried the scorpion across the river and Rob Manfred and got stung halfway across. And as they're sinking to the bottom, he's like, "Why'd you do it?" He's like, "You do what I was when you when you started carrying me across." I mean, Pat O'Connor, you got what you deserved.
Yeah. Yeah, that said, you know, he did have a long career as the CEO, and you know, he points out correctly, you know, during that whole time, minor league revenues increased about 5% every year, and most businesses would kill for that. So there's something to be said about this. I'm guessing in some ways it could be they're a victim of their own success. If the minor leagues were not as lucrative as they are, Major League Baseball would not be nearly as interested in taking them over, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if they were money losers across the board, yeah, they'd be staying far, far away. Let them keep their current agreement and just let them and just kind of float along.
Yep. All right. Well, you got anything else, Matt?
No, I think that's a pretty solid week there. Hopefully, we'll be able to do another show next week with some hopefully good news about the Atlanta Braves moving on to the next round of the playoffs.
That's right. If not, we can always talk about the instructional leagues.
Yeah, because I believe they're getting started. I believe they're doing them at Gwinnett now that they shut down the alternate site and the players that are going to be around for the postseason that have moved on to the bubble, that they're going to be bringing in the players who did not participate, in non 40-man roster players, they're bringing in for them for an instructional league.
Yeah, so that's going to happen October 5th. We haven't heard anything like a roster or anything, and who knows if we will hear a roster, but hopefully we will. But hopefully we're not just talking about the instructional league coming up. Hopefully we're talking about Braves playoff baseball for at least the next month.
Yep, and hopefully we'll be talking about who's going to be on the Division Series roster.
Yes. I hope everybody has a good week. Hope everybody enjoys some winning Braves baseball. Have a good one, guys.
Have a good one.
No. Ni le bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal, tout ça m'est bien égal. Non, rien de rien. Non, je ne regrette rien. C'est payé. J'ai allumé le feu, mes chagrins, mes plaisirs, je n'ai plus besoin d'eux. Balayer les amours avec leur trémolo, balayer pour toujours, je repars à zéro. Rien, ni le bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal, tout ça m'est bien égal. Non, rien de rien, non, je ne regrette rien, car ma vie.